So what I'm talking about this evening is provisionally titled, What is Buddhism To? Work, Pleasure and Life. That's the plan. So just to recap a bit from what I said the other day. Well, the other day I was talking quite a lot about principles, about at least what I understand, what I've been taught to be some of the crucial ideas and thoughts that underpin the practice of Buddhism. And the reason I was talking about that is because Buddhism is a philosophy as well as a religion. It's asking for us to apply our intelligence, yeah? And that means we need to understand and we need to think. If we just had rules and we had to obey them, then you don't need to have all of the stuff I was talking about explained to you, because it's just like do this, do that. But that's not the way Buddhism works. Buddhism works on the basis of it invites you to apply your own intelligence. It invites you to apply all of yourself, because that's what we need to do to fulfill our human potential, to become wise, to become kind, and to become enlightened. So I'm just saying that because I think it's really important to just be really clear about that, that we're being asked to think, we're being asked to apply our intelligence. So to continue on that theme, I'm going to not recap, but what I'm going to do this evening is talk about applications, but also I want to just reiterate some of what I said the other day, because that's important to understand why the applications are important. I said important twice in one sentence there, sorry about that. So, and also because there's something about just being really, really clear about what Buddhism's talking about. So I'm not, hopefully this will come across as, again, it's, remember that as I'm speaking, the key message for me in all of the Buddha's teaching is that we have the capacity to act. We have the initiative, we have the autonomy to make of our lives what we will. And that's crucial to remember. Whatever Buddhism's saying, it includes the opportunity for us to take responsibility for our lives and act in accordance with what brings benefit and growth to us, for ourselves and others. And if you can't see how that applies, then you even need to get clearer about it or ask yourself the question, why is this Buddhism? Because that is at the heart of Buddhism. So that's a little introduction. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to spend a little bit of time setting the scene, talking about what is Buddhism a bit more deeply. Then I'm going to move on to work and pleasure, because they're important parts of our lives. That's where the real, that's where the real meat of our experience lies. And then I'm going to end up by speaking about life, becoming more general again. So what is Buddhism to? So the other day I talked about Buddhism, the Buddha, the Dharma, having a very clear assessment of the true nature of reality, the texture of reality, what life is like, how the world works. And the invitation is, and what the Buddha's saying is, this is the way things are. You can either go with it and use it, or you can fight it and suffer. That is a central part of the Buddha's message. So what he's telling us, what he's saying, is a bit hard to hear, actually. We don't necessarily like it. The Buddha's assessment of reality, of our experience of reality, is that it's impermanent, that it is insubstantial, and that it is painful, at least to some extent. And that sucks. We don't like that. We don't want to hear that. We don't want that to be true. I certainly don't. I want life to be permanent, pleasurable, and substantial, to be real. That's what I'm looking for from life. And the Buddha's saying, that is not the way it is, actually. That is not the way it is. And that's why we suffer, actually. We suffer because we do not acknowledge, we do not accept the true nature of reality. And conversely, if we acknowledge and accept that truth, then we stop suffering. So that might sound a bit heavy. Don't worry, things will brighten up as we go on. But I think it's just really important to be clear. This is what the Buddha's saying about life. But there's a bit more to say. So that's still quite general. What does that say about us? What does that say about me right here and you? What the Buddha's saying about us is that we experience life as limited, narrow, separate selves. I experience myself as me and you as other. Yeah, that is a fundamental basis of my experience of reality. I'm in here, you're out there. Sanghanista's there, the podium's here, the bell's there, the Buddha's there, and I'm in here. And I'm small and limited, and the world is big and scary. So that for me, that when the Buddha describes human life like that, I think, yeah, I can. I don't like hearing that, but it's true, actually. I feel limited, I feel cramped, I feel scared a lot of the time. I'd say that's my predominant emotional experience, is one of fear and anxiety. And that's what I want to change. And that's what the Buddha is giving us all the opportunity to change. But he also says a bit more. So we're isolated, we're limited, we're separate. What do we do with that experience? Well, what we do is that we try to find safety, we try to find fulfillment, which is completely understandable and is entirely human. And we do that by grasping and by pushing away. All the time we're going, I want this, maybe this will work, maybe this will make me full, will make me happy, will make me completely satisfied, will make me safe. That's bad, that's really scary, I've got to get rid of that completely, can't come near me. Those are the two basic drives in life, grasping and pushing away. You can see it repeated again and again, very subtle ways and very gross, big, strong ways. And that's what we do in life. And I'm going to use a technical term here. I'm going to describe that as going for refuge. All the time in life, we're going for refuge. We're going for refuge to what we think we want. We're grasping after things. Oh, this will make me happy. That will make me happy. Walking up to the shop and getting ice cream, that will make me happy and fulfilled. Getting that woman to agree to go out with me, that will make me happy. That will make me fulfilled. Getting all these people to think that I know what I'm talking about and I'm wise and intelligent, that will bring me happiness, that will bring me fulfillment. That's what we think. That's what I think. All the time we're acting out this basic tendency. And that's just the way it is, actually. That is what we're going to do all the time, all throughout life. We're grasping after things. We're looking for things that will work. We're not going to stop that. I don't think we're going to stop that. What we're trying to do in the practice of the Dharma is change how we do that. Change the way we grasp after things. Change. I'm going to talk mainly about grasping, not about pushing away, although what I'm going to say applies to that as well. What we're trying to do is change what we grasp after, change the way in which we relate to experience. So rather than grasping it in a limited, greedy, compulsive way, We still act, we still move towards things, but we change the way we do it. So rather than grasping after sex and drugs, we move towards meditation and contentment and beauty. It's the same action, we're still moving towards things, we're still trying to relate to things, but we're doing it in a different way. So that's the setting, basically. That's the Buddha's assessment of what life is like. But then he says more. He says that change is possible. In fact, because we're impermanent and insubstantial, because we're not real, we can change and we can grow. And this is the point I was making last time about this is fundamental. The Buddha's message is fundamentally hopeful. Things can change, things can get better. So change is possible, life can unfold. Rather, I'm going to use this image a lot of limitation, contraction, and expansion. Yeah, hopefully that resonates for you. But to grasp, to try and pull into us, those are limited, those are difficult responses. Whereas to expand, to open up, to bring something into relationship with us in a positive, open-hearted way, is expansive and therefore positive. Hopefully that is a relevant. That you can relate to that energistically. I think most people can. So, change is possible. Life can unfold. Life can get better. I'm going to use another image here or another metaphor, and that things can, things, so we're talking about things getting better, life expanding, rather than us feeling limited and separate, we can open up to life, we can open up in relationship to experience and to others. And I'm going to, I suggest, well, this is a language that Sangharakshita, our teacher, uses. He says that that can happen on a horizontal level, and it can happen on a vertical level. So horizontally, things can get better. We can learn yoga. We can learn qigong. We can go to the gym and improve our physical health. We can have, we can enter into positive relationships with people. We can do the Alpha Course. We can do psychotherapy. We can read books which help us understand ourselves and other people better. All of, we can do all of these things, and they can all help. They can all help us expand our experience of life, move out of a limited experience to a more creative, more positive, more expansive relationship, which is better for both us and other people. We can all do that, and that is all useful. And lots of different things can help us do that. Buddhism also talks of vertical change, radical transformation. I was talking about this the other day. So we have a limited, separate self in relation to, and that is separate to others. And all this horizontal change just helps it be better. It helps it be smoother. I can't remember who it was. Stiramani was talking about the stones rubbing up against each other. So the stones get smoothened. Life gets better. That's all horizontal growth. But the Buddha's saying that we can radically change our relationship with life. Rather than experiencing myself in here and you out there and us being separate, or, and maybe it's not a portcullis, maybe it's a nice garden between us, but there's still separation. The Buddha's saying that actually we can change, we can totally change that experience and, it, and break the subject-object dichotomy and have a different experience relationship to the world. That is possible. Can't say very much about that because I haven't experienced it, but I, that's what I'm living this life for, and I do believe it's possible. And I'm going to suggest that Buddhism's got a particularly clear assessment of how we go about doing that, and that's the really significant contribution that Buddhism makes. But anyway, first of all, we're talking about the horizontal. Yeah, that's important, that's crucial. We've been talking about this in our group. If you go from limited to unlimited, to breaking down the bonds too quickly, it doesn't work. You go mad, basically, for at least potentially. I was saying, if you look at people's accounts of high-level religious experience, if you look at people's accounts of seeing through the subject-object dichotomy, and you look at people with high, you know, serious schizophrenia, their accounts can be identical. The experiences they describe can be identical. The difference is your capacity to absorb that experience, to use it, to work with it creatively. And that's why we need to expand out, so we can deal with the experience of seeing through. So how do we make things better? What do we do? Well, we make things better by changing our relationship with life, by changing our relationship with happiness, by changing our relationship with what we do, how we live. And I just want to acknowledge here that actually that can be hard. It can be, it's difficult actually. Life can be difficult. And trying to grow, trying to expand, trying to live life, it's just a bit tricky, actually. We all know this. We've all had this experience in different ways. Like a classic example is, I want to get fit. Yeah, getting fit is a horizontal growth. It's good for you. It's better to be have a healthy body than a painful, sick one. So we're like, right, I'm going to go to the gym and I'm going to get fit. I don't know how many of you have done this, probably quite a few. Certainly when I do that, I join the gym and then I go once or twice, and then 6 months later I realise that I haven't been going and I've just wasted all that money on my membership. So, even, yeah, just, it's like, actually, we know what we want to do. We know that going to the gym is good for us, but it's hard to do it. We know that practicing Buddhism, that meditating is good for us, but it's hard to do it. I think it's important to acknowledge that, just in a way, to give ourselves a break, actually. Like, it's you know, it's hard enough to change, but then if you're giving yourself a hard time because you're not doing it, that just causes you loads of pain and loads of suffering. Don't do it, actually. we need to give ourselves a break. It's hard what we're trying to do. Just trying to have, just having a life, trying to be a decent human being isn't easy. So one of the reasons I think it's hard is because we're always, because of the pull of this craving, this pull of just wanting something to make us feel happy and make us feel secure and make us feel safe, can be overwhelming and it can be very immediate. I think this came up in our group this evening, actually. One of the challenges is to shift, like, immediate experience is very attractive because we have it right now and we know we're alive and we know who we are. And often, like, the principle of growth, the principle of unfoldment, it's more subtle, it's harder to get hold of, it takes longer. So, again, sticking with something like meditating. So meditation does help us feel better, does help us feel more fulfilled and bring meaning. But if you want to have intense mental psychic experience, it's much easier to take drugs. You will have a stronger experience quicker through taking drugs through meditation. I guarantee it. But it's messy, it's complicated, it's not as wholesome, it's not as pure. So we're trying to work with this principle of the fact that we want to be happy, we want to be fulfilled, and trying to find out the best ways to go about fulfilling that, and even acknowledging that actually a lot of the time we know what are the best ways of living that out, but it's hard to do. So why is it hard to do? Sangharakshita pinpoints this by saying that, to use one of his aphorisms, we need to find emotional equivalents to our intellectual understandings. We need to find emotional-lived equivalents to our intellectual understandings. So Buddhism tells us all this stuff about we are not separate, we are not, actually the division between us isn't real. But how do we live that out? How do we actually feel that? How do we make that into our lives? That's the trick. And that's what I'm going to talk about next. That's, in a sense, the main part of the talk. So, but just one more thing to say, and again, it feels like I'm overstressing this point, but it's because I think it's so important. The crucial thing is to retain a sense of initiative and power and autonomy. And so I'm going to reiterate this point about the Buddha saying that just as a pot fills drip by drip, just as water drips into a pot drip by drip, so our lives accumulate good values little by little, little by little. Every moment of awareness, every moment of kindness makes a difference. That is true, and we have to keep that in mind, because otherwise it's just like overwhelming and incapacitating, and it justifies inaction. Actually, if we have that view, then we just think, well, I can't do it, so I won't bother doing anything. So it's really, really important to take that on board. Every time when you're meditating and you realise that you're not focusing on the counting and you're thinking about something else, every time you realise that and you come back to the counting, that is a moment of success and that makes a difference. Really believe that as deeply and as fully as you can, because it's true and it makes a hell of a difference. So we're going to talk about key areas of life, what I think of as key areas of life, and those are work and pleasure. The reason I want to talk about these is because on this retreat we've been meditating. Meditation is good and it's important. It's a way of working with our minds, and we spend a lot more of our time not meditating. Maybe we spend 15, 20 minutes a day meditating, maybe we spend an hour a day, maybe even we spend an hour and a half to 2 hours a day. Even then, even if you're spending 2 hours a day meditating, which is a lot by most people's standards, there's still 22 other hours of the day where you're doing something else. And given that the Buddha says that the mind is central and what we do with our minds is central, let's think about what we do with that time, because that makes a difference. So I'm going to start off talking about work. And in a way, I'm preaching to the converted here to a certain extent. You're here on a working retreat, yeah? So you must have some inkling, some intuition of the importance of work, the relevance of work. I know this when we went round at the start of the retreat and talked about why we're here. Quite a few of you mentioned kind of wanting to think about work or how you do work or why work is important. And really, I just really reinforce your sense of it is important. It's important because we spend a lot of time doing it. Most of us spend 8 hours a day, 48 weeks a year, 40 years of our lives, 50 years of our lives working. So let's bring some awareness to how we're doing that. Let's explore how we can do it well. How, rather than relating to work as something that we grasp after or push away and we try to bring into this limited, narrow self sense of ourselves, how can we make work an environment in which we open, that the things that we take into us expand us and open us up? Because if we can do that, that's going to be powerful. It's going to be useful for us. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try and evoke just different ways of looking at things or different possibilities. I'm just going to open little doorways and see if you resonate with them. See if it makes any sense to you. And I'm going to do that by just giving you a few little examples of things I've experienced in my life and things I've experienced in other people's lives. Rather than talk about me all the time, I'm going to talk about the six of us who are running this retreat together and just kind of show you little doorways, which I haven't checked all of these examples with them, so they might not be totally true or they might not agree. But I'm just going to open little doors into the things I see in my friends, the ways they live their lives, and say, that looks like that's a good way to lead life. What do you think? So that's my intention. So first of all, we're talking about work and what work's for, how we use work. So I'm going to talk about, first of all, in the first place, we need to galvanise our energies. So we're talking, a moment ago I mentioned emotional equivalence, lived equivalence to intellectual understandings. So the intellect's up here and the emotions and life are down here. So how do we get our life involved? That's what we're talking about. Well, work's a good way because we have to do it. We have to act. Yeah, we use our energy. And I notice Arya Bandhu is a real exemplar of using energy in work. He really, I just have a sense of him as somebody who understands that actually life is to be lived. Let's act. Let's do something. So I'll just tell you a little story of... It's true. So back in February, every now and again at Padmaloka, we have these periods where we don't have any retreats and we just have everyone who lives here together doing some meditation, doing some Buddhist ritual, having some discussions, but also just relaxing, going for walks, going for bicycle rides, eating ice cream. So what did we do that week? Well, I was lying about eating ice cream. Arya Bandhu built a wall. Yeah, that's what he did with his week of relaxation. Because the wall needed building, but he wanted to use his energy. It's like, come on, we need to build this wall, we're doing a project, blah, blah, blah. But the thing for me is that it's like, he sees that energy is to be used and it's good to use it. And I think that's really admirable, actually. Yeah, do something, activate your energy, engage. So I was lying about eating ice cream, Arya Bandhu was building a wall. I think that's good. So that's one. That's just one little doorway. Activate your energy. Do something. Do some work. Obviously, you're all on a working retreat, so you understand that. Because this principle of opening up is like, if you're trying to hold on to energy, you're like this. Whereas if you act, you move. Open things. Open up. Things expand. That metaphor won't apply all the time, but I think it's relevant there. The next area I want to talk about is this thing of grasping. We've got these limited selves, and a lot of the time we're grasping after things to fill us up, to make us feel safe, to make us feel secure. So I don't know for you, but certainly for me, work has been an important way in which I've sought to do that. I want to be someone. I want to be safe. I want to be recognised. That means I want career. I want status. I want recognition. I crave that, not excessively, but I'm addicted to it. I'm grasping after it to shore me up, to make me feel safe, to make me feel big. Oh, I'm Dharma Charlene. I give Dharma talks. Aren't I important and worthwhile and meaningful? That's I do that. And that's that desire for career and recognition. So something I've noticed with Diogenes is that he's really not doing that in quite a significant way, actually. So that desire for worldly recognition and worldly career and worldly success. In his work in Germany, he was an educationalist and a social worker. And he did that work well, and I'm sure he got recognition and praise for it. He chose to come and live at Padmaloka and be a housekeeper. Now, I don't know about you guys, but, educationalist, social worker, housekeeper, there's a definite difference in status, career, recognition. But Diogenes looking for something, he's not looking for external recognition. He's looking for, he's listening to a quieter, more like a closer voice of, well, what's important to me? What brings meaning and satisfaction to my life? Not what other people think, but what's important to me? And he's living that out in his life, which I think is admirable. And we can do that too. We can make choices in our lives to not chase after career and recognition, but sort of follow our own truth, live out our values. One of the reasons he came here is because he wanted to live out his Buddhist values by living and working here. And he did that. Then the next thing we can do, or the next area we can look at, is the sense of actually just going out to other people. Like, we're talking about this, the division between ourselves and other people, and weakening that, breaking through that. Work's a fantastic opportunity to do that. You can really give to other people in a meaningful way. You can be a doctor, you can be a nurse. That really helps people, actually. That really makes a difference. And that, in that sense, you're going beyond yourself in some ways. But we can also do it in much more immediate and down-to-earth ways. Something I've really noticed in the last few days with John is that around the washing up and all that, he's really attentive, he's really concerned to help everyone, get the job done and do it reasonably quickly, so you know people know what they're doing and they don't spend ages getting a bit stuck or taking a long time, not having spare time. And that those are, and this is what I'm talking about, these little moments, those are moments of going beyond self and helping other people. And it makes a difference, actually. Just that moment when you say, do you need a hand washing up? That is a moment of going beyond self, and it makes a difference. And finally, just working together, working with other people. We've all had, we're having an experience of that, being on this retreat together. And actually, that just helps us expand, and it's just good. There's nothing wrong with pleasure as well. It's just enjoyable to work with other people. And in a positive environment, when you're doing something of value. I've had a real sense of that in our team. We have a little meeting just before we start the work period to check that we all know what's going on. And often those meetings feel very positive and very bright because we're doing something together. And that's satisfying and that's meaningful. And that helps me open up. That helps me see life in a bigger perspective rather than holding on to me. I expand. So now I want to talk about pleasure, because pleasure is important. It's certainly to me, and I imagine it is to all of you too. And this is, again, I'm going to talk about this partially because of this misapprehension of Buddhism. Buddhism isn't about stopping pleasure, cutting off from pleasure. That's not really possible, actually. Buddhism's about transformation, transforming our relationship with pleasure. That's what I'm going to talk about now. So I'm going to talk about it in two different aspects. So first of all, I'm going to talk about the pleasures of friendship, the pleasures of being friends with other people, connection. And in the first sense, I just want, and this applies to all relationships, but particularly to just, like a bunch of blokes like us, a bunch of guys, living and working around each other, having our lives together. It's important to mention that Buddhism recognises the importance of friendship, but doesn't say very much about it. And Sangha Achta has placed a really big emphasis on the importance of friendship. I'd say it's one of his two most crucial emphases, the two things he really draws out. And I know that what I'm going to say, you're going to have a sense of, because particularly with some of you guys who are here for the first time or for a new time, you've already commented on it to me. You've already said, I came into this place, I wasn't knowing what to expect, but everyone's so open, everyone's so interested in each other, everyone's so kind and attentive. That is a consequence of Sangharakshita's just emphasis on friendship. Friendship isn't an abstract. You only have friendly people and friends. So you've all already got a sense of this and why it's important and why it makes a difference, because just coming into this environment, I've just seen, you could just see as we sit around the dinner tables, people opening up, being friendly, being interested. And you could, I'm sure I don't have to labour the point, you can feel yourself expanding. Life is better, life is richer when we do that. So I'm just going to say a few things about, just to really make it explicit, three areas in which friendship makes a difference. So first of all, just in terms of straightforward enjoyment, just straightforwardly enjoying being with your friends. It's great, it's important, go for it. The Buddha doesn't have a downer on pleasure. So I think I want to particularly mention here, obviously this is kind, appropriate enjoyment. So Stiramani is a wonderful man. And I have to say, Stiramani gets teased a lot at Padmaloka, very much including by me. I do it all the time. And one of the things, I completely trust that, because Stiramani, I trust that Stiramani knows that it's in good natured and it's kindly and it's open and it's playful and it's soft and it's kind. And I know that if he didn't feel that way, and if I or anyone else stepped out of line, he'd tell us to say, boys, you're going too far. That hurts my feelings, actually. But he doesn't do that. He just sort of glows and delights in it, in a way. And it's good fun. Stiramani's a good person to tease. I enjoy teasing him. But do you see what I mean? So just to start off with that, it's not some kind of high, really, like, weird thing. It's just natural. It's just blokes hanging out with each other with kindness and awareness. Secondly, friendship is about supporting each other, actually, and that's really important too. I've had a couple of periods of time this year when I've been ill, I've been in my bed. I've just really appreciated people coming and checking how I am. And that really means something, actually. It's important that we do that. And particularly Diyajina, there's been a couple of times where he's come to me and he's like, oh, you're ill. I've had quite a bad cough and I couldn't meditate and all that. And he came and he brought me a traditional German remedy to help me with coughs. He came and he bought me some onion tea. Think about it, onion tea. It was not a pleasurable experience, but I really trust that he wasn't playing a practical joke on me, and he brought that tea out of love and care and concern. And it did help, I'm happy to report, but it did taste grim as well. But there's another, so there's a very immediate way we can support each other, but we can support each other in another way, which is equally important. We can support each other, again, a number of you have commented, trying to lead a positive life, a creative life, an ethical life, it can be hard work. And we need the support of other people who are doing that. Actually, that really helps, that really makes a difference. That's one of the reasons why we have this sangha, this movement, to support each other. And that support doesn't mean, do this, do that. It's much more open than that. It's exemplification. And something Arya Bandhu told me earlier this year is Arya Bandhu meditates at 7 o'clock every morning at Padmaloka. Doesn't matter if it's his day off, doesn't matter if he went to bed at 1 o'clock in the morning, doesn't matter if he's sick, he's always there. Yeah? And he doesn't give anyone else a hard time if they're not. So that's what I mean by exemplification. You're just like, I'm committed, I'm going to do this, I'm committed to meditation. And here I am. Doesn't tell anyone else off if they're not doing it, but you know he's there. And that promotes me to get up and come and meditate. I don't always, sometimes I lie in bed. But I know that Arya Bandhu is there, and that helps me want to do it. And we can all do that in little ways, moment by moment. And then finally, in a sense, the most important way that friendship opens us up is through sharing. For sharing of ourselves, sharing of our joys, sharing of our pains, sharing the bits of us which we're a bit embarrassed and uncomfortable about and we wish we didn't do, but actually we do. And that, I think that can be just an extremely powerful practice of expanding this limited sense of self. So much of it's about, it's like, oh, I can't tell anyone about this, and we just get compacted and tight. And if we can share of ourselves, of other people. We just open up. We loosen, we expand. Those things which seemed so constraining, those shells that covered us, we actually realise they're not really there. They just dissolve and they don't hold us in anymore. And in this case, my friendship with Sanghanista is just really important to me, actually. Like, I feel like I have got a lot of good friends in this world, but Sanghanista is one of the people who I feel that I can actually say anything to. Like, there's some things which I definitely would rather not have to say. There's some things where I wish I didn't feel that, but I do, and I can tell him about that. And that's just, it's such a blessing, it's such a release, it's such a relief. And I just really rejoice in that. And it's important to remember that that trust, that sharing comes on the basis of trust and love. Yeah? We move into sharing. We open up as gradually and appropriately. It's really important. It's not about just sort of going to people and saying, oh, you know, sharing my like deepest, darkest, most painful pattern. I shouldn't do that with you because we don't know each other that well. It's not appropriate. It's not kind to myself. Yeah, we open up gradually. We grow open up appropriately, and that can really let us help us see through ourselves. So there's another, so that's friendship, which I think is a massively important area. Another important area, which I'm going to spend a lot less time talking about, is that of cultivating beauty. So again, I'm talking about opening up, about moving out from limitation and expanding. And I'm also talking about the extent to which the natural and completely uncontrollable human tendency to grasp onto things, to want things to make us feel safe and happy and well, and the fact that that is not going to change for a long time. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to change that relationship. And one of the ways we do that is through beauty, through refinement. We change for what we grasp after, we change the way we grasp. And in this respect, I think Stiramani is quite an example, actually. Last year, he was really not well, much less not well than I was. And could kind of see, and when you're not well, it's very easy to close down and to get stuck. And, you know, particularly when I'm ill, like I easily start grasping after quite crude pleasures. It's like I want to watch chocolate, I want to eat chocolate and watch trashy movies. That's what I do when I'm ill, actually. And that's quite gross, that's quite grasping and quite limited. Stiramani last year really got into photography, like nature photography, really looking at things. Because he needed some way to expand, he needed some way to keep moving outward, even when he was ill and he had quite limited energy. And I thought that was a really creative way of engaging with life, which is what this is all about. So I've just been talking about pleasure and, you know, and the need to shift from grasping to some other kind of relationship. Stop trying to pour in pleasure to us and relate to it in a different way. So I'm going to give you a little model to think about that with, which I came up with myself, but I do think it holds true. There's three ways of relating to life, relating to pleasure. The first one is addictive. That's the one where we're grasping onto things, we're holding, we're pulling them into us, we're trying to fill a hole which we cannot fill. Addiction. More, more, more. That's something I can definitely experience in my life. It's not a very bad addiction, but I can be quite addictive to games. Computer games, role-playing games, fantasy games, science fiction games, superhero games. I've been playing these games since I was 6 years old, so there's a lot of weight, of momentum into those patterns of behaviour. And what I need to recognise with that is that actually those patterns of behaviour, I don't think there's that much I can do about them. They're so habituated, they're so strong, they just lead me into limited states. Well, I think actually, basically, I just need to say no. And that is what I did last month. I just said no. I'm not going to do this anymore. I can't make it refined. I can't control it. I just need to say no. And sometimes we need to recognise that actually these patterns of behaviour, although they seem pleasurable, actually they just result in pain. drugs, obvious example. It's like we think they'll bring us pleasure, actually they bring us pain. We can just say no. But if we're going to say no to that, we need to say yes to something else. So what do we say yes to? What I think what we say yes to is human pleasure. Human pleasure is a really big, wide category. Human pleasure means sort of everything. It means food, it means nature, it means sex, it means friendship, it means movies, it means going on holiday, it means the internet, it means all of these things related to in a healthy way. And what I think a healthy way is a way where we recognise that they bring us some pleasure, but we don't ask for them more than they can give us. The problem with grasping is that we want it to fill a hole it can't hold, fill. If we just sort of, you know, William Blake talks about it, if we grasp a joy, we kill it. If we open up and let it pass through our lives, then it brings expansion, it brings positivity, and it's okay. And it's really, really, I think it's really important in our whatever degree of interest we have in Buddhism is to be okay with having healthy human pleasure. Just straightforward, like, again, enjoyment. And Aryabandha, I think, again, is really good for this, actually. So sometimes we have a party or we have a barbecue, and he's like, right, I'm going to get the beers in. And he goes down to Sainsbury's, and he comes back with a crate of Bitburger Dry, these non-alcoholic German beers. Because he likes beer. That's fine. He likes beer. He enjoys drinking beer. But he knows how good it is. He knows it's not going to make me happy in a lasting, permanent way. I don't need to drink loads to try and bring total fulfillment. I'll have one, two bottles of non-alcoholic beer. I'll enjoy it and I'll let it go. I think that's really it's really just important to be okay about that and look for that in our lives. Because life is tough. So we need to find the enjoyment that we can and relate to it in a positive way. And basically that means recognising that once we see that things won't bring full and lasting permanent satisfaction, we can relate to them in a more human way. But finally, we can do more than that. We can relate to pleasure in a way which actually refines us, actually takes us from one level to a higher level. And I think Sanghanista is a good example of this. As he mentioned, we've been friends for a long time. We've been friends since we were 16. When we were 16, we were not practicing Buddhism together. We were practicing hedonism together, particularly as manifested through smoking weed and drinking beer. Did a lot of that. And he was really into weed. He loved it. You know, what it looked like, what it smelt like, how it tasted, where it grew, where it came from. He loved it. What he does now, what he's taken, he hasn't stopped that. He's got, and that's that interest, that drive, that curiosity, that wanting refinement. And what he's done is he's shifted that into incense and green tea appreciation. And it's the same thing. It's that, you know, it's like, where does it come from? What does it smell like? How can we get more of it, make it better? Take the same thing, but rather than taking him into drugs and limitation, leads into beauty and aesthetics. Really fantastic. Really, you know, I think he's really done something very clever there. He's taken an addictive pattern and it's turned it into a creative one, which, as I was saying earlier, I can't do. With my addiction, I can't find a way to shift it, so I've just had to say no. Refinement is obviously better. So the main point with pleasure is appreciation. We're looking for appreciation. We're looking for human and spiritual pleasure as wherever we can find it, actually. Because that is, we can grow through difficulty and pain, but it's much easier to grow through pleasure and expansion. It's just easier. It's better. So wherever you can, think about these ideas, think about these, which one of those, I relate to that, I don't relate to that. Think about those things and think where you can find them in your life, because it makes life easier and better. So now I just want to finish off by talking about life. So we've talked about, I'd started off talking about, an assessment of life. We're limited, we're constrained, we grasp after things to fill the holes within us. That's a basic experience of life. Then I've been talking about the fact that we can change that, we can change our relationship with life, rather than being limited and grasping and it never working. That's the thing about limiting and grasping. It doesn't work, it gets worse. We can expand, we can become more fulfilled, we can become more happy human beings. And everyone is trying to do that with varying degrees of success. Christians, Muslims, Hindus, Sikhs, existential nihilists, Richard Dawkins, everyone's trying to find ways of finding happiness and fulfillment and meaning and safety. You know, just to be safe, just to be safe, actually, just to be safe, to be real, to be happy. That's what we're all looking for. Yep. And so we all do that. We're all going for refuge to things that we think will work. And as I say, I'm just going to follow off by talking about, I think there's three different sorts of things we can go for refuge to, three sort of things we can look to. We can first of all look to things that don't work. Yeah. So actually we try and get this thing to make us safe, happy, secure, fulfilled. Doesn't work. It just causes us pain. It might cause us a short-term amount of pleasure, but actually it leads to more pain. There's something about the desire for immediacy and not seeing the consequences for our actions. So again, like the obvious example there is drugs. Drugs have an immediate effect on us, and that makes us, which can bring a certain amount of pleasure and fulfillment, which means that we don't see the other side of it, but actually in the longer term, certainly in my case, it led to isolation, withdrawal and pain. So we can go for refuge to things that actually just don't work and will never work. Then we can go for refuge to things which help us, which broaden us, which expand us, which make life better on this horizontal level. And that is really, really important to do that. Yeah, it's really, really important to find those things which help us have a good, expansive, positive life. Things which help us open up. And again, it's really important to remember that lots of people are doing this. Buddhism does not have the exclusive rights to this aspect of experience. Lots of things do this. But then, and here we come again to the crucial, decisive insight of Buddhism, this broadening up, it basically, what we're doing in that environment is this fundamental division between ourselves and other people, which is the fundamental source of suffering. We don't get rid of that. We just make it better. We just make it easier. Like, as I was saying before, rather than having a big fence or a barbed wire line between us, we've got a nice grassy field with flowers growing in it and a stream, and we play tennis together across the stream or whatever. It's better. But there's still division. What Buddhism says is, what Buddhism presents us with, a possibility of actually changing that division, seeing through that division, radically transforming our relationship with the world, that we do not have that division anymore. And that's ultimately the goal of Buddhism. And, and that is possible. And that is... We can relate to that in such a way right here and right now. It doesn't. So I've just spoken about something very high and very far away, and we can have a relationship with that possibility right here and right now. And what that looks like is shifting from always looking to take things into us, instead to, it's this opening up, bringing us into something else, rather than being self-referential, opening to a possibility of something bigger, something broader than ourselves. And if we live our lives on that basis, it's more satisfying and more fulfilling. So what are those things? What are those things that are bigger than us, that we can relate to in such a way that, which draw us into a deeper level of happiness and fulfillment? Well, those things are, for Buddha, the possibility of a radically different life, a totally transformed consciousness. The Dharma, the path that can take us to that experience for ourselves. And the Sangha, which is the conception of human relationships based on that experience of selflessness. So rather than have it, which is very hard to express, the Sangha as a conception of a world in which it's not about me and it's not about you, it's about us. A world not characterized by selfish preoccupation, but openness and mutual relationships. And what we can do is shift, and gradually, as we like, as is appropriate for us, as however much we're open to the possibility of what Buddhism's got to teach us, we can slowly and appropriately shift what we're looking for, what we think makes our life pleasurable and meaningful, where we derive our sources of meaning and satisfaction from, where we find meaning and connection. So I'm just going to, and that's, I just want to say one more thing and then I'm going to finish. So, meaning and connection are basic human drives. That is what we're all looking for, we are told. As I think I quoted it the other day, there's a seriously large amount of research into the relationship between money and happiness. As a lot of time has been spent studying it. And what they consistently find is if you've got money up here and happiness up here, what happens is that money brings you happiness up to a certain point. Up to a certain point, actually having more money makes you happier. Having a roof over your head, having enough food to feed yourself and feed your kids, having enough money to get your kids a decent education, all of those things make you happier. That is proven. At a certain point, it flatlines, and they've done a lot of research because it's amazing just how much, after a certain amount of money, money no longer brings you happiness. Meaning and connection are what they've, and based on extensive studies, meaning and connection is what brings happiness. So really, what the vision that Buddhism presents is an opportunity to find sources of meaning and connection with other people who practice Buddhism, to the extent to which you want to. All of what I've said applies to lots of different things. You can find meaning and connection in lots and lots of different ways. Buddhism presents you both with a path, you know, this Buddhist organisation presents you with a context to work out what is important to you, live a life, find a life of meaning, and it presents people who you can do that in relationship with, so it can answer those needs. Other things can too. And also, Buddhism presents a possibility of the radical shift of meaning and connection to the highest possible level where actually, you know, the possibility of enlightenment, which answers those questions on a level which I can't express because I don't have that experience, where actually our desire for meaning and connection has been answered to such an extent that rather than looking for meaning and connection from others, we are just an unending source of meaning and connection for the benefit of all beings. And the final point is that every step we take makes a difference. I'm just going to reiterate that again because I feel like I've just presented quite a high vision, which I just want to really reiterate that actually, you know, being here, being with each other, getting up and meditating in the morning, working together, all those things make some difference in our quest for meaning and connection. And that is valuable. And don't dismiss that, and don't underestimate the significance of that.